Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Roman Mask by Thomas M. D. Brooke, narrated by Stephen Crossley. Prologue. Dawn was finally touching the sky to the east, turning it a bright scarlet, which was fitting, considering how much blood had been spilt this night. My men were exhausted, lips blackened with dehydration, eyes creased with fatigue, their armour and weapons streaked with blood from 1,000 vanquished tribesmen, who lay sprawled upon the improvised turf stockade we'd hastily erected upon the pass. It hadn't proved much of a barrier for the men to defend, but it had been enough, and we'd cut the tribesmen down in their hundreds as they tried to crawl and hack their way over it. All around me I could see death. Heaps of giant warriors lay broken all around our position, but we knew there were still many more, too many to count, far too many to kill. I knew my men couldn't fend off another attack. We were all too exhausted after fighting throughout the night. Only 300 of us remained able to hold a blade, surely not enough to repulse another wave of screaming warriors. I walked along the line of men assessing their condition, and passed a legionary binding his shield directly to his arm. His shield hand had been crushed into a bloody ruin in the last attack, which prevented him holding the 3-ply oak and birch shield conventionally. I nodded my head in approval as he hefted the shield up, testing its weight. Everyone was needed to push back the barbarian horde. I couldn't afford to excuse any but the most severely injured from the line.
"Good as new, sir."
He tried a grin of bravado, but the pain etched in his face made this look more like a grimace. I gave him as reassuring a smile as I could muster.
"You'll do fine, legionary,"
and continued down the line, stopping as I saw that the enemy tribesmen were mustering for another attack, just visible through the dim light of dawn. They were bellowing and screaming insults at us as they mustered the courage to make another assault and advance up the high ground to our position in the pass, barring their path. It was difficult to assess their numbers, as some were sure to be their women who followed them to battle, and spurred them on from behind with wild screams and shrieks of hatred aimed at their foes. Even so, it was clear that my small, pitiful force would be heavily outnumbered once again, and we no longer had the cover of darkness to conceal how few of us remained standing. A legionary nearby started to beseech any Roman god that cared to listen, tears streaming down his face, asking to be saved from this seething swarm of inhuman hatred as he watched the assembling tribesmen from the turf palisade. I walked up behind him, resting my hand on his shoulder.
"Steady, soldier. No god is needed to get us out of this. We'll stop them ourselves, just like we have each time before."
He looked round at me in surprise, wiping the tears from his face.
"Yes, sir. Of course. I'm sorry."
I shook my head.
"No need to apologize, legionary. We're all scared. There's no shame in that. Just remember, they may look mean, but they haven't been a match for our steel as yet. We'll push them back. Just make sure you keep the line tight."
He stood up straighter.
"Yes, sir. You can rely on me, sir. I won't let you down."
I nodded in approval, then continued on my way, stopping to briefly tell a centurion to keep an eye on that legionary. If just one man started to panic, it could spread like wildfire through the entire body of men. I couldn't blame the legionary for doubting our survival, as I shared his fear. As I saw the great mass of Germanic warriors fan out from the base of the hill, screaming, shouting, waving their spears above their heads as they advanced, it was hard to believe that anything could stop such a display of malice and strength. Optiotetricus called over a warning, his voice now little more than a hoarse croak after a night of shouting orders.
"Look, sir! Men to the west of us!"
My heart sunk further.
"What? How have they got behind us?"
If they came at us from both sides, we were finished. I couldn't afford to split my tiny force. I shouted at the optio, keeping my voice level to mask my rising panic.
"How many tribesmen are there?"
Tetricus's voice rose in excitement.
"They're not tribesmen, sir. They're ours."
I shook my head in disbelief, looked over to the west to confirm it with my own eyes, not daring to believe what he was saying. Sure enough, the rigid lines of a marching column could be seen in the distance, too orderly to be anything except Roman. Cheers of jubilation swept around my small unit of men. Tetricus was weeping.
"You were right, sir. You said the relief would come. You've saved us all. We all owe you our lives."
I shook my head.
"We still need to repulse this attack. It'll do us no good if the relief force finds only corpses manning the palisade."
Someone else shouted out. I was too confused now to tell who.
"No need, sir. Look, the tribesmen have seen them too. They're breaking off the attack."
I stared over the palisade, watching the German tribesmen stream away from our position, giving up on their final assault, which may well have been our end. I turned to the optio.
"It looks like we'll be living through this after all, Tetricus."
He nodded his head and banged his shield with his bloodied gladius, getting the attention of the rest of the legionaries.
"Cassius! Cassius! Cassius!"
The rest of the men took up the chant, shouting my name and banging their shields in time. I looked around, stunned. Tetricus came up to me as the legionaries continued the chant.
"You're a hero, sir. There's no denying it now."
Chapter 1.
I woke in my bed, feeling the softness of the finest quality linen cool against my bare skin. I half opened my eyes to the late March sunshine that bathed my room in light. Instantly, I shut them again at the sharp pain in my head. I tried to swallow the unpleasant taste in my mouth, but it was dry and parched, my throat raw. I turned away from the sunlight and tried to will myself back to sleep. Surely it couldn't be morning already. I hugged a small cushion to my stomach that was fighting for an equal consideration in my morning misery. It growled angrily, and I groaned in discomfort. Oh no, a hangover. Slowly my senses returned to me, and I remembered something very important. Last night I hadn't slept alone. I gently stretched my arm behind me to see if there is a warm body still lying next to me. I sighed in disappointment as I found nothing, just the faint impression of a female form pressed into the surface of the mattress. Titer had already left, but by the feel of it not early enough to avoid notice. A moment's apprehension of the trouble this could cause was quickly replaced by the euphoria of finally managing to woo the senator's daughter to my bed. I grinned broadly despite my thumping headache and sour stomach. My elation almost overshadowed the fast-returning memories of the previous night's passion. Almost, but not quite. Her body was exquisite. Her soft skin was as beautifully pale as a fine, delicate marble figurine, and I remember my fingers tingling as I caressed her supple, naked thighs. Thoughts of Titer brought arousal. I groaned in pleasure as I remembered her commenting on my athleticism and muscular form as she ran her long nails down my back.
"Look at him, Petrellis! The sun high in the sky, and Gaius is still abed," announced a sharp female voice that I knew only too well.
All sexual arousal was instantly shattered, my eyes popping open at once.
"Who let you in? Haven't you got anything better to do than snoop around my home?" I snapped angrily.
The last person I wanted to see right now was my infernal sister.
"It isn't your home, Gaius. It's the property of our father, and as you've no income of your own, it's liable to remain that way,"
quipped my younger sister by 3 years, Antonia.
"She insisted on seeing you at once, my lord. She wouldn't be dissuaded," announced my trusted body slave Petrellis,
a tall man with an honest, hard-working face, his hair turning grey from its original red. His Celtic roots showed in his bearing. Powerful broad shoulders lay concealed under his simple but well-made slave's tunic, and he towered over the slight petite form of my sister in a light dress of silk. However, it was clear who dominated the doorway to my room, and it wasn't the hulking Celt.
"Would you like to eat in the dining room, or would you prefer the garden veranda?"
demanded my sister, tapping her foot impatiently and making it perfectly clear that remaining in bed was no longer an option. I grabbed a cushion and threw it at her.
"In the garden. I need some fresh air."
The cushion missed Antonia and instead knocked over and smashed a vase our mother had given me.
"In order to brighten the place up."
I fell out of bed whilst making the throw and landed heavily on the cold, tiled floor with a great oof. Athletic grace? Was that how Tida had described me?
"Now look what you've made me do,"
I shouted at my stern-faced sister as I lay sprawled on the cold floor. I glanced around the bedroom of bright red and black wall panels and conceded that my mother might have a point. Despite the obvious sumptuous wealth and rich furnishings, the choice of colours was a bit dour. Perhaps it was time to have it repainted, this time in a colour scheme of my own choosing. Petrellis jumped at the excuse to run off and find a brush to clear up the mess, whilst my sister told me she would await me in the garden, and,
"If you think I am telling Mother about the vase, you should think again."
I slowly picked myself off the ground, shaking my head to clear it. Only now did I realise that I was completely naked. I didn't mind Petrellis seeing me unclothed. He had seen me naked more times than anyone. But I did begrudge my sister having a good eyeful. I staggered over to the large bowl of fresh water Petrellis had left out for me and started to splash water onto my face to wake myself up. I soon realised this wasn't having any effect, so I submerged my entire head in the bowl Petrellis had carefully decorated with dried rose petals. I blurted underwater before bringing my head upwards and shaking off the excess water with a soft cloth. I walked over to a polished silver hand mirror left on the side and admired my reflection. Despite the bloodshot eyes, there was no hiding my classic Roman profile, dark colouring and handsome face. My bare shoulders showed well-defined muscles, due to extensive work with the gladius. The very picture of a Roman hero, I thought to myself, inwardly laughing at the notion. I grabbed a light tunic, one conveniently left out by Petrellis, which I donned on the way to the garden, passing through the Ionian colonnade and a large atrium with its statue of Apollo standing grandly in the centre. Antonio often told me that this was far too large a house for me to live in alone, with a small group of slaves to keep me in comfort. It wasn't technically mine, as Antonio had earlier pointed out. It was owned by my father just as all the furnishings were, the statue of Apollo, and even Petrellis, his wife Prisca, and the other household slaves. Well, if Antonia thought she could move me out so that she and her husband, the insipid lawyer Aulus, could move in, she had another thing coming. Antonia awaited me in the garden, where a young dark Arabian slave named Badriah served me a simple meal of dates and dried figs, accompanied by fresh bread and olive oil on a small trestle table with a stool. Bodria slammed the bowl of fruit down with a huff and gave me a fierce stare which didn't suit her open and pretty face but could wither the hide off a wild animal. She turned and stormed off to the kitchen without making her customary bow. I winced as she slammed the door to the kitchen. It looked as if Bodria wasn't pleased that someone else had shared my bed last night. I nervously looked over at my sister, but she ignored the exchange. My sister already knew, and disapproved, of the fact that the boundaries between master and slave were more blurred in my household than respectability required. But this morning my sister had other concerns. She sat primly on another stool, legs crossed in a modest fashion, her face bearing only the slightest saffron to accentuate her fawn-like features. She could have been considered beautiful if she didn't have the habit of perpetually wearing a disapproving scowl, one that furrowed her forehead and creased her eyes to narrow slits. Her bare arms showed goose pimples, but she made no complaint. It was too early in the year to be eating outside. Despite the bright sunshine, there was still a cool nip to the fresh breeze brushing across the large garden of vines, marble fountains, and a perfectly trimmed selection of bright flowers. I liked the breeze, however. It helped cool the unnatural warm flush to my face and was an invigorating balm to my sore head. I started to eat my meal whilst Antonia looked on with her customary face of disapproval.
"I noticed a litter leaving when I arrived this morning. Apparently attendants waited all night to escort a lady home."
Hades! She had seen Titer leaving. This could prove difficult.
"Oh, yes, that was good of them,"
I said, feigning nonchalance between mouthfuls. I had forgotten about the slaves used to carry her litter. No doubt Titer had as well. "Oh, well, that will give the neighbours something to talk about." Not that they were short of things to talk about when it concerned me.
"I asked one of my slaves to catch the litter up and find out who travelled within,"
my sister revealed.
"I found out it was the Lady Titer, daughter of Titus Cinna."
"Quite a beauty, I seem to remember," my sister added in a mild tone of voice.
"I didn't realise you'd ever met her."
This was dangerous territory.
"Of course I have. I was with you,"
Antonia answered whilst clearing some leaves off the table which had blown there in the breeze.
"When I attended you at the theatre last summer, do you remember?"
"No," I replied, although now I did.
"You must do. She was there with her husband."
I dropped the bread I held and slapped the table with the palm of my hand.
"All right, Antonia, if you have something to say, just come out and say it. Let's not hide behind the charade of politeness."
I grimaced as I swallowed a date. The prospect of moral guidance from my sister wasn't improving my appetite. Titus' husband is nearly 3 times her age, and by the sounds of it, prefers young boys to women. Of course she is going to find diversion elsewhere.
"You know I only have your best interest at heart, Gaius. I don't want you embroiled in another scandal the likes of last time."
"That was over 10 years ago. I was little more than a boy then," I exclaimed.
Would I never be able to forget that regrettable episode?
"Yes, but your behaviour lately looks to be leading you down that same path. Don't you think you should practice a little more discretion?"
answered Antonia in her most disapproving tone.
"All right, that is enough. I don't have to listen to this even from you, Antonia. Now leave me alone to eat my figs in peace."
I flapped my arms around in irritation, spilling the olive oil to the ground. My sister stalked off with an exasperated cry.
"When will you grow up, Gaius?"
I knew Antonia was right. I needed to be more discreet or I'd end up in the same situation which had led me to join the army, a year earlier than my father had mapped out for me 11 years ago. I had been lucky to survive that particular scandal with my life. Some hadn't, and even the princeps' daughter ended up exiled. The situation with Titer was completely different, I told myself. I'd had my eye on her for months now. I met her briefly with my sister the summer before, at the theatre, but I had not been formally introduced until I saw her at one of my friend Seneca's lavish dinner parties. Anyone invited to a banquet with Seneca could be relied upon to be just the wrong side of respectable. Seneca despised anyone he deemed dull, so everyone invited normally had some secret to tell. Titer was at the party, her husband was not. That alone said something. She arrived in a long silk gap-sleeved tunic with a shamefully plunging neckline. There was no matronly, all-encompassing stola for Titer, and surveyed the room with a wicked glint of mischief in her light brown eyes. Her unbound hair was richly black and tightly curled, and her mischievous smile revealed even teeth under a small button nose, which wrinkled prettily when she laughed at a remark another guest whispered in her ear. Her eyes met mine, and again I noticed the glint in her eyes as she sized me up. She handed her light cape to a house slave and stood there boldly, erect nipples protruding through her thin tunic. By the gods, she knew how to make an entrance. I was a regular attendant at fashionable parties and had been ever since I returned from Germany. It was over 4 years since the terrifying night at Western Gate Pass, which resulted in my status being elevated into one of the great heroes of Rome, a man known by reputation throughout the Roman world and possibly beyond. I was lauded as a war hero, and it reflected well on Seneca to have a genuine soldier at his party. It was, after all, a society which idealized the Roman fighting man above all others. I knew my reputation was in reality a sham, but that didn't stop me from profiting from it shamelessly. I knew exactly how to play my part. I would play down my prowess with false modesty and claim that it was the men who had fought under my charge who were the real heroes. A leader is only as good as the men he leads, I tell them with a serious note to my voice, as if it was a terrible burden being praised by others. They lapped it up in droves, admiring my supposed bravery and stating that I was a credit to the Republic. Titer turned out to be no different. After being introduced to me, she listened avidly to my tales of the rigours of the march, the wild dress of the fearsome Germans, the cold, harsh winters in foreign climes. Some of it was true, some of it was made up. I was no longer sure even I knew the difference. It never seemed to matter. People always took me at my word, and providing I always gave a consistent account, they believed anything I told them. I knew the reason why. It was because they wanted it to be true. They wanted to believe in Roman demigod heroes pushing further the realms of civilization. Only a man who had faced combat knew the realities of war, the fear and the horror of it. But nobody wanted to hear that. Tales of heroes were much more fun. I began to notice that mine and Titer's paths would cross more and more often. The social scene in Rome was full of lavish banquets, and what started as mild flirting, such as the odd hand left on a leg, sly grins over a crowded room, became more serious as our feelings towards one another became clear. The more wine we consumed, the more daring we would become. A stolen embrace one night, a passionate kiss the next, culminating in a sharing her litter back from a party last night. As we approached my home in the gently rocking covered litter, I whispered in her ear, "I fear you have captivated me completely, Titer." I was more than a little drunk, and my passions were running wild. In Seneca's parties it wasn't unheard of him to crush the iridescent green insect, the infamous Spanish fly, which was a powerful aphrodisiac, and add it to the wine in order to liven up proceedings.
She gave a slight smile. "But surely the mighty Cassius doesn't fear anything." She ran her fingers along my biceps. My pulse raced.
"With a sword in my hand, I fear nothing. But you have broken through my defences with a single glance."
She laughed at my pomposity. "The only sword I am interested in is this one." She moved her hand up under my toga and caressed me there.
I swept the curtains aside and lifted her out of the litter. Her laughter pealed through the night as I carried her to my house, banged on the door, and barged past a sleep-befuddled Petrellis, who opened the door with a small oil lamp in his hand. We were ripping each other's clothes off before we reached my bed, and I kissed her passionately before moving my mouth to her breasts, whereupon she moaned in pleasure. I pulled the remains of her clothing off and looked down at her naked body, and felt my breath catch in my throat. Never before had I seen such a beauty. With a thrill of excitement, I opened her legs and entered her. As we made love, she ran her fingers down my back, almost painfully, and bit my shoulder in a passionate release of pleasure. I was oblivious to the pain, as I was intoxicated by her, the taste of her hot mouth on mine as our two bodies wrestled with one another. The smell of her musk and cinnamon perfume filled my senses as I pushed harder into her, relishing her screams of passion as I finally erupted into her, my eyes stinging with hot tears of desire. A cold gust of wind brought me back to my table outside with my half-eaten meal. What would happen now? I didn't know. Could we continue this adulterous affair? Chaita told me that her husband barely paid her any attention at all and cared nothing for whatever wild life she chose to lead. However, Chaita's father was Titus Cinna, the very rich, very powerful friend of my own father. Bringing shame onto that family could even test my father's patience, and my self-indulgent lifestyle could come to an abrupt end if my father's money wasn't forthcoming. Is Titus worth risking all this for? I pondered as I looked around the grand garden and chewed a fig. I left the remains of my meal and walked back into the house, asking Petrellis to attend me whilst I got ready to leave. I hoped that my sister had left the house in a temper, leaving me alone to clothe myself in peace, but no such luck. She scowled at me from the doorway as I washed and shaved and donned my toga with the help of Petrellis.
"You cannot carry on like this, you know," she snapped.
"Carry on in what way?"
"You do nothing but exercise in the daytime, followed by the occasional wild party in the evening. You may have managed to maintain your soldier's build in such a fashion, but I am not fooled.
You're no better than that reprobate friend of yours, Seneca." "Seneca is a perfectly respectable citizen," I lied, as I felt the smooth side of my freshly shaved face. "Besides, you seem to forget the invaluable work I do helping train the Praetorian Guard."
"Pah! You have no commission to train anyone. It is only your friend Horatius that allows you to take the odd drill." "And how often is that?"
"Once a month at the most," she replied, exasperated.
This was all too true. My friend from the gymnasium, Horatius Rufer, was a leading tribune to one of the prefects of the Praetorians, and occasionally let me take the men out on a training session or on a forced march. He claimed it was out of respect for my military record and that it gave his troops a chance to work alongside a genuine Roman hero. But in reality, it suited him as much as me. He could spend more time with one of his many women in the city, whilst I took his men out and put them through their paces. It suited me because I could claim to my father and frustrated family that I was still actively working within the army, and thereby ensuring that my father's generosity never dried up, even if the reality was that it wasn't much more than a jaunt in the countryside once a month. I wanted to change the subject away from my lack of...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?